Hi everyone, I'm Brahman, I'm an addict.
Hey, Brahman.
I feel really honored and humbled being here. But I'm going to be honest, earlier in this week, I didn't feel either of those things. My disease likes to take things that are healthy for me, things that I love, things that are solution-based, and twist them in my mind and make me think I don't want to do them, that I have better things to do, that lying on the couch is a better idea. And this entire week, I've been more stuck in self-obsession than I have in a long time, which is really kind of perfect now that I'm standing here. But I was in the shower earlier today, and you know, my head kind of started doing that thing where I start to tell my lead, and you know, getting like nervous, a little bit excited, like fearful, and I had that moment of clarity and of humility where I got this snapshot of my life a little over 3.5 years ago. And you know, I was completely almost brought to tears by the fact that, you know, my life today is so wonderful, and I get so caught up in like self-obsession that I actually think like I don't want to show up for Narcotics Anonymous when Narcotics Anonymous has given me freedom. You know, my clean date is February 22nd, 2011. And before then, I didn't have a life. I existed. And, you know, I owe everything that I have and the breath in my lungs right now to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. And, because I'm a human and I get caught up in self-obsession, I'll think like I have better things to do than show up for something that's giving me everything. I can so easily remember and go back to that place after, like, you know, I come to a meeting or I hear a message, and I'm like reminded of like how fragile this thing is, and what my life was like before. And like I quickly forget, you know, that before I found NA, I was completely and totally controlled by my self-obsession. I was so afraid of the future. I was so afraid of my life, like, never being anything. I was so afraid of my feelings that I couldn't do anything but run away from them and use. I was so resentful over the past, over all of the things that had happened to me, that I used to play the victim to keep on using, of all the things that I had caused that I viewed as like just stuff that had happened to me and oh poor me. And I was so angry about the present that all I could do was get high. You know, I pretty much spent every day in that. I would fantasize about what I, you know, I'd hoped I could do with my life, and I would tell myself if I could just get this job, then everything was going to be okay. Or if I could just go to school, if I could just stop using for a couple of days, I could get my shit together. You know, if I could just do this, then everything would be okay. And the reality was, I was too trapped by fear and just caught in the grip that I couldn't do anything but get high. And my world was incredibly small. You know, at the end of my road, I woke up every day obsessed to use, even though I didn't want to, and I didn't really have any kind of like faith or belief system, but like I prayed anyways because I didn't know what else to do. I remember like waking up and just being like, if there is a God, like please don't let me use today. And as I'm getting in the car and driving the cop, I'm praying like, please just let me pull this car over, because I just didn't want to get high anymore. You know, the drugs had stopped working for me for a long time. And so the thing that I had done to avoid all those feelings of fear and of anger, guilt and shame and resentment, it stopped working. Like, it wasn't doing its job. Like, I wasn't able to get numb enough. So I was walking around high as a kite, but still feeling all of my fear and all of my anger and all of my resentment, and it was just too much for me. I just wanted to die every second of the day, and I was too scared to even do that. I just remember, like, walking around in the shell of a life. I didn't have any friends. I didn't have any family. I couldn't keep a job. I would do absolutely anything for the next one. And I was so afraid of everything. I remember, like, driving in the car and thinking, like, I should just pull this wheel and run into this semi-truck and, like, just end it all. And I was too scared to do that. Driving down the road being like, God, if there's a God, like, please just don't let me get high. Like, please just don't let me use. And I would use anyway. You know, I was completely controlled by that obsession to avoid my feelings, to get more, to not feel, and it didn't even work anymore. And it's just so funny, like, how quickly I could forget that, you know, how quickly, like, I came here so desperate, that if you would have told me to stand on my head, on top of that building, like, I would have climbed that building and I would have stood on my head for as long as you told me to if I thought that was going to keep me clean. And, you know, not that long later, then I'm like, I don't want to go to a meeting, or I don't want to show up for NA, or I don't want to pick up the phone when my sponsees call. I don't want to pick up the phone and call my sponsor because I get caught up in self-obsession today. And, like, the crazy thing is, like, today, like, I can get some freedom from it. Like, this program has given me a guide to get out of the past and to get out of the future and to be in this present moment, and allowed me the beautiful gift to practice love in my life today. You know, and to have some faith and acceptance, which I have found is the solution to when I get caught in that triangle. But it is so easy for me, just like it was so easy for me to pick up the drug, for me to pick up self-pity, and to run to these defects that I have used my whole life to try to, like, bring me comfort, but all they really do is hurt me. But it's so easy for me to still go there, you know. I get caught up in petty things and self-obsession. This year has been amazing. My whole recovery has been amazing, but after I got clean for a little while, I had the amazing gift of being able to take care of my grandmother who had dementia, and giving my time to help this woman, who I didn't even know, because really I didn't spend any time with my family when I was using. I avoided them my whole life like the plague. And to get to know this woman as she was slipping away was, like, the most wonderful gift of my recovery, that I got to give so selflessly of my time. And it also allowed me to really focus on recovery and go to a lot of meetings and really be involved in the fellowship and be involved in tons of service. And it was, like, the best 2 years of my life. It was wonderful, and it was really hard, but it was awesome and beautiful. And I found it was really easy to stay in the solution. And when it came to a point where we could no longer take care of her, and, you know, I was really scared because my life was going to, for the first time, like, I was going to be able to, like, choose what I wanted to do and, like, step out in faith. And, you know, like, I still allow fear to paralyze me. Like, I was scared. You know, I was really scared to, like, have some faith, and I couldn't stop, like, projecting on, like, what was going to happen, or thinking that I was going to fail because I'm not good enough and all these things, and just getting caught up in that triangle. And, you know, but I walked out in that faith because, like, since the day I came here, you know, you guys told me, like, if I didn't believe, like, I could believe that you believe. And that was my process of coming to believe and to have faith, that, like, I take that step in fear, not knowing what's going to happen, like, paralyzed. And like, I tell somebody and I get honest about it, and then I take that step anyways. And through that process, like, I've built faith in this program, in this process, and in the God of my understanding, that if I just get out of the way and, like, do some footwork, like, it's going to be okay. And I took some steps in faith and, like, found myself, you know, through some other stuff, like, able to go back to school. And it's an amazing gift, you know. Like, I could never finish anything before I found Narcotics Anonymous. I would go to school for a couple months and quit. I would get a job for a couple days or a couple weeks and quit. I just didn't know how to, like, stick anything out. And anytime anything got hard or scary or uncomfortable, like, I dipped. And, like, I'm in school, and I really like it. It's really awesome. And, like, I'm so grateful to be in school. So, like, every day, like, I want to bitch about how hard it is and how far I have to drive. And, oh, like, it's so hard. You don't understand. Like, I can't go to 5 meetings a week anymore because I'm spending 50 hours a week getting to school and being at school and then doing all this other work outside of school to, like, get this dream that I want. And, like, this is amazing. Like, this, like, Narcotics Anonymous gave me the ability to do that, to show up and, like, to put the footwork in, even when it's hard and I don't want to. And, like, in my head, I just want to be like, oh, this sucks, and, like, oh, poor me, and, like, why is my life so hard? And, like, I forget that, like, not that long ago, you know, I couldn't get a day clean. Like, I couldn't stop using. And that was all I wanted, was stop using for one day. But, beginning of this week, you know, I had to go to the dentist because I had some issues with a root canal that I previously had done. And then, the next day my car wouldn't start, and I was late to school and started the week off, you know, great. And just this whole week I've just been miserable, walking around like, what am I gonna do? You know, my mother came and picked me up and took me to school. And the whole way to school, I'm just stuck in self-pity and like, what am I going to do? And this is awful. And not able to have, I had barely any acceptance, no faith. And so many times throughout my recovery, I've been in these situations where it seemed like my back was against the wall. There was nothing, no solution, no end in sight to the pain that I was in. And I just had a little faith and things worked out. And I always, when I get to the other side of those situations, think like, all right, God, next time, like, I'm not going to doubt. Like, I'm going to have faith that it's going to be okay. And then a little time goes by and I forget. And I get some pain and some stuff happens that I'm powerless over. And I'm like, what am I going to do? Caught in that triangle. And, you know, and, like, I just stay. I just try to stay in this program and in this solution because, like, I know for me, like, I'm a human. Like, I'm probably always gonna have doubt. I don't know if I'll ever have that perfect faith, but I know it's like I keep showing up and I keep trying to practice love for myself and love for other people and like just being honest, like about the fact that I can stand up here and say like I didn't have any acceptance this week, like I didn't have any faith this week, like I was just stuck in self-pity and self-obsession, and like that's the truth, you know. And as the week went on, and like my boyfriend's taking me to school every day, like going out of his way to drop me off early in the morning and then go to work. And the whole time I'm like, this sucks because I have to go to school 2 hours early. Like, not like, thank you for taking time out of your day to do this for me. You know, caught in that. And it wasn't until, like, I started getting these little signs, which happened. Because whenever, like, I'm in that stuff and those defects and in that self-pity and self-obsession, like, I feel it, you know? I've worked some steps and, like, indulging in defects, like, never really feels good. Like, I always think it's going to feel good. It's, like, that instant gratification thing. But as soon as, like, I act out, like, I can't even, like, feel sorry for myself and let it feel good anymore. Like, I start to feel, and it's just painful, and it sucks. Because I wish I could go back to that place where I could just lie on the couch in self-pity for weeks on end and it was okay. But, you know, like, I started getting these little messages and little signs, and, like, that's how, like, my God has always spoken to me. Like, if I just, like, get out of the past and out of the future, I'm able to, like, be in the moment, like, the message is everywhere. People will say things, even people that aren't us, you know, will, like, say little things that'll, like, remind me of something, and, like, I start to, like, hear it. So when I'm able to, like, stay in this present moment, you know, I start to get that message that I need and, like, start to remember, like, how grateful that I want to be for this gift. And, you know, I went to a meeting and one of the topics in the meeting on Friday was, like, what do you struggle with today and what's your solution? And, right then I realized, like, this whole week I've self-obsession, and I just laughed, because I didn't even remember, like, what my topic was for, you know, coming here. And, like, earlier that day, a friend had asked me, and I had to, like, go look on the message that Court had sent me to see what my topic was, and I was like, it's the triangle of self-obsession, and we both just cracked up, because he knew, like, my whole week, that was where I was at. And, sometimes, you know, that's just how, like, even though this week is sucked and I've caused myself unnecessary pain and, like, probably caused some harm in my relationships by being, so self-obsessed, like, I can be like, wow, that's really perfect, because now I can come up here and, like, share with you guys honestly and, like, let you know that, like, I've been stuck in it. But, like, I can also stand up here and say, like, that I know, like, there's a solution. And, sometimes it takes me a little while to find it, and sometimes I have to go backwards before I can go forward. And sometimes I have to beat my head off the wall 50 times before I realize, like, ouch, that hurts. And, you know, I just keep beating my head off this wall, but that's okay, because, like, one day, like, I'll be like, you know what, this hurts, like, I don't want to do this anymore, like, I'm gonna get help. And, like, I go to the program, and I go to these steps, and I go to you guys, and, you guys tell me it's okay, and, you love me, and that reminds me, like, that I need to love me, because, like, that's the solution. Like, when I get stuck in the past, and in the resentment, and I get stuck in the anger, and I get stuck in the future, and the fear, like, the answer to that is, like, acceptance, and love, and faith, and, sometimes, like, I don't have it. I just don't have it. And then you guys give it to me. And that allows me to give it to myself. You know, because everything I've experienced in this process and through this journey has given me 100% faith. That even if I don't have the faith right now, but, like, I know as long as I don't put a drug in me, as long as I don't pick up, it's going to be okay. You know, that I can run and make a mess of my life, that I can hurt, that I can get caught in the grips of that triangle without using, because I can get caught in the grips of some stuff without picking up a drug. But as long as I don't take that first one, and, like, at some point, if I'm willing to get honest, like, that it's going to be okay, as long as I don't get high. You know, because I've caused a lot of pain in recovery, and I've made a lot of mistakes, but, like, that's how I learn. Like, I was taught that, like, if I'm not making mistakes, then I'm in trouble. That I need to be always making new mistakes and, like, growing. That if I'm not making mistakes, I'm not growing. And for me, that's dangerous, because if I'm not growing, I'm, like, moving towards a drug. I'm moving towards, like, leaving Narcotics Anonymous. Like, I need to be here, because I, obviously, like, I'm a really quick forgetter. You know, it just takes a couple hours or a couple days, and, like, I forget about the pain that was my life, like, before I got here. I forget that, when I'm not here and focused on the solution, and when I'm not practicing love and acceptance and faith in my life, that, like, I'm out, like, hurting myself and hurting other people, and, like, moving towards, like, just being completely self-obsessed. And, like, it doesn't feel good. Like, it doesn't feel good to walk around and only think, like, about me, like, what I need, what I think I need, what I want, because I found in my life, like, my whole life, like, I chased what I thought I wanted or what I thought I needed, and then, like, I got it, and it wasn't enough. There was never enough. I always needed more, no matter what it was. I thought, if I could just get this, I'll be okay, and it wasn't okay. I needed more. If I could just have this money and do these drugs, like, I'll be okay, and I was never okay. I always needed more. When I chase things, you know, like, I never get it. Like, I don't ever get it, but this program has given me the tools by working these steps to be able to, like, take a step back and breathe and realize that in this moment, like, my higher power is with me, and I have everything that I need in this moment. I may not have everything I want, but I have everything that I need. And, I don't ever have to pick up a drug if I work and walk this program and live this way of life. And, I don't think there's anything that I could say that is more important as that message that they read, that the basic text, like, tells us. It's our message that it, like, promises us that, like, any addict can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. I can tell you, like, as much as I fall short, and as much as I, like, sometimes stray off the path a little bit or try to find that easier, softer way, which there really isn't one. Like, this is the easier, softer way. As much as I do that, like, I know for a fact that this new way of life is so incredibly amazing. The things that I have inside, like, the fact that, like, I can stand here, even though I don't want to be here, even though it's uncomfortable to stand up here and, like, talk to you guys, even though it makes me feel insecure, like, the fact that I can do that is a miracle. The fact that, like, I'm comfortable in my skin, that I can look myself in the eye, that I can look you in the eye, and the fact that I can sit and be still and quiet in myself, like, all of these things, things that don't even seem like a big deal on a day-to-day basis are like huge measures of recovery for me, are like huge amazing gifts that I'm so grateful for. When I'm in touch with that, when I'm in the moment, when I'm in the solution, when I'm helping other people, when I'm being selfless, because like that's the solution for me. You know, I get so caught up in me and what I think I need and what I want, but like the solution is like finding out how somebody else is doing, like picking up the phone and calling somebody that I saw at a meeting that looked like they were struggling or going through something, like calling them and being like, how are you? You know, like, what can I do to serve you today? It's like, there's so much service. Like, service doesn't only mean like I have a position at my home group or like I go have a position in the area or region. Like, I like to do those things because I like to feel connected and that helps like me like expand my circle. But like, service is just like hugging somebody in a meeting that looks like they need a hug. You know, service is just like just being available, picking up the phone when somebody calls. There are so many ways to serve in this program. And like my sponsor, you know, like we sit down and we read from the text. And one of the most powerful things that she pointed out to me is like in the beginning of the basic text, it talks about our symbol and how like the wider the base of our symbol, like the higher the point of freedom. And she says she likes to apply that to her own life and like all of her we and like all of these tools in recovery that we can get are like, you know, she wants to make her base as wide as possible, like reaching out and meeting more people and doing more service and getting more phone numbers and using them and like putting all these things in her circle, because the wider that base, like the taller her point of freedom is going to be. And like that's what I want. Like I want to get like, you know, I'm an addict, so, like, I want more, like, I want my point, like, I want the highest point of freedom there possibly is, you know, like, I want to get it, so, like, I'm always trying to expand that base, and, I tell you, it's just amazing, and, like, this program is so beautiful, like, the fact that I can stand here and tell you, like, not even, like, 12 hours ago, like, I didn't feel any of this stuff. I felt very, I don't know what the word is, kind of blah. Like, I didn't, you know, wasn't excited about coming out here. And I love this area. I love this retreat. It's, like, my favorite retreat. And I didn't even want to come, you know? And that just right there is, like, my reminder to me that, like, I'm still an addict. Because my disease takes things that I love and tells me I don't want to do them. It takes things that are healthy for me and tells me, like, that that's not for me, that I don't want it. I don't know, I'm just, like, I'm really odd right now, like, that I can stand here and see all this, and I know, like, if I don't maintain this, like, if I don't continually work at staying in this moment, like, I'll get caught up like that in that triangle. I'll get sucked up that quick. It's so easy for me to start to just maybe dream about, like, the things I want to do with my life or, like, the future, and, like, pretty soon, like, I'm just projecting all this fear onto it, and, it doesn't take a lot for me to, like, view past situations with that resentment and be like, yeah, that sucks, and I don't like that, and I didn't get this, and I got cheated, and before you know it, like, I'm caught up in that. Like, I know, like, to stay in that moment, like, I have to do the work, and, like, I don't like work, you know? I don't want to do it. Like, I still would like to just be lazy and get on by the bare minimum. Like, I know for a fact, like, the more I put into my relationships and the more I put into my work with, like, my relationship with my higher power, like, the better I feel. But I still want to get by with the bare minimum of, like, that, thank you for waking me up today and being clean, and that's, you know, and go on through my day. And, like, that's great, you know, any prayer is good. But I know for me, like, the more I put into my prayer life, like, the better I'm going to feel, and, like, the more out of myself I'm going to get and be able to, like, serve. You know, the more out of, like, self I'll get, But I still, like, will do the bare minimum. So I know, like, the solution to, like, staying in this moment and being present is to, like, chase my higher power. Is to keep reaching out. Is to do what you guys taught me to do. Is to show up. Just show up. I don't have to be happy about showing up. I can be honest. I can go to meetings and be like, I don't want to be here. I want to be on the couch watching Netflix. You know, but, like, to just show up, to pick up the phone, to keep reaching out, to work steps, and to pray, and, like, all those things, and, like, to practice these principles in my affairs. And, like, the simplest way I can do that is just by practicing love. Because if I'm loving myself, if I'm practicing love in my relationships and just love in my life, like, I'm not gonna, like, all the other principles, like, encompass that. Like, if I'm just trying to focus on practicing love, because I gotta keep things real simple. Like, I can get real overwhelmed with, like, so many spiritual principles, like, how am I gonna remember to practice all this stuff, like, I'm gonna fall short. And I'm a perfectionist, so, like, if I can't do it perfectly, like, I'm not doing it at all. So for me, like, that's just the simplest way, like, for me to think of it is, like, all I gotta do is just practice love. And, I get to stay in this moment and in the solution, which is just love, faith, and acceptance. And, you know, all I can say is keep coming back. You know, it gets so good, and it'll get bad, and it'll get so good again. And, like, as long as I stay here, I know that, like, everything's going to be all right in the end. So, I'm Brahman. I'm an addict. That's all I have. Thanks.
Thanks, Ron, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. Next addict I would like to introduce, he's our second speaker, Jason F. from Monday Night Miracles, Group of NA, in the Northwest Ohio area of NA.
My name's Jason, I'm an addict.
Yeah,
it's always a real pleasure to be able to do anything. I don't want to say it as a favor, but it's always a real pleasure to do anything when somebody from Narcotics Anonymous asks me to. I do a lot of things in my life for people without asking a whole lot in return, and I'm not always happy about it. I don't remember very many times I haven't been happy to do something for Narcotics Anonymous, though. And it's a blessing to have been able to come as far as I have in my life that gives somebody else the impression that I have something good to offer a group of people. And I very clearly remember when I got here, I didn't have anything to offer anybody. And I got clean right around here. I got clean in Indiana, Pennsylvania. And there's some people here this weekend that I haven't seen for years. And one of those guys, I ran into him today. I shocked him when he was coming. He was trying to go to hug somebody else, and I stepped in front of him, and I was like, "Hey, it's me." And he was like, "Oh my God!" You know, and that guy was at one of the first meetings I ever went to in Indiana, and I'm sure he remembers me. I wasn't anybody that had anything to offer anyone. People didn't want to hug me because I smelled. They didn't want to bum me a cigarette because they knew I didn't have the money to get another one to give back to them. Even back when cigarettes were cheap and they were only like $2 a pack, and people just didn't want to hear me talk because the language was so vulgar and disgusting that. It shocked even rooms full of addicts, and I'm not quite that same person anymore today, and I've learned a lot of things about myself that have enabled me to not be that person anymore and to not have those types of behaviors, and I'm always amazed at the funny little coincidences in recovery. I didn't know Bronwyn before she spoke tonight. I've never met her. She introduced herself to me earlier today. I have no idea what her background is or what kind of week she's had, but she pretty much described my week by sitting up here. I called my sister yesterday, or my sister called me, and I told her what I was doing. I said, "Yeah, I'm going to Columbus with my wife and my kids, and leaving them there with my in-laws, and I'm driving from Columbus over to Pennsylvania to speak at this retreat." She goes, "Oh, that's really cool." And I said, "I don't really think it's that cool. I don't really want to do it because I don't really think I have anything to offer these people after how I've behaved this week." And she kind of interrupted me. And my sister's not an addict. My sister doesn't really know a whole lot about recovery. But she said, you know, I don't think you're right about that. And she doesn't really think I'm right about anything because she's my older sister. But she said, you know, you've just made human mistakes this week. And that just means that you're a human being. And I don't think she really understood the gravity of that statement. Like, my sister was just telling me I'm normal just like everybody else. And although when I got here I had this grandiose idea that I was going to be the greatest fucking recovering addict of all time, like, I'm actually really, really happy when somebody looks at me and says, guess what, dude, you're average. Because that means I'm better than 50% of the people that came before me. And when I got here, I wasn't better than anybody. So I've climbed 50 rungs in the 100-rung ladder. And really, I'm okay with that. Like, that's a really good compliment to say, dude, you're okay. Like, you're normal. You're just like everybody else. To me, that's a real big compliment. And there are some things in my life I do really well, and there are some things in my life I do not do very well. I talk for a living. It's what I do. I talk, I write, and I convince other people and other people in my profession that what I'm saying is right, and what they're saying is not as right as what I'm saying. And it's kind of fun sometimes, but it walks a real fine line between manipulating the hell out of people. And I'm good at that. I did that when I was getting high. And there are times where I catch myself in my profession. I don't lie. I don't mislead people. But there are times where I know what I'm doing. I know that I'm telling people things that, you know, will make them think a certain thing that might not actually be what it is. And that's to my advantage or to my client's advantage. And I struggle with that sometimes. I struggle with how I communicate with people. I'm a little guy. I'm about 5'10 and 150 pounds. But people have told me in the past I have been accused of being very aggressive and intimidating. I don't think there's anything aggressive or intimidating about me. I think I'm pretty comical when I get mad because I run around like a chicken with my head cut off and scream and yell and wonder why nobody pays attention to me. And it's like, well, anybody that acts like an idiot like that, is no one's going to want to pay attention to them. But I have this way of dealing with people that probably isn't the most professional and the best at times. Not always, but sometimes I can be kind of a dick to other people. And I say that in meetings where I'm from regularly, and everybody laughs and they say, oh my God, he's just now realizing he's an asshole. But it's a trait that I have. And I've spent a long time in recovery trying to not be an asshole and trying to just learn how to look at other people with just even like an ounce of the empathy that people in this room look at me with when I need help. And I'm not always good at it. Like I said, I struggled. I struggled this week. I have an assistant that I'm not getting along with well. And the problem is that I need her. I really, really need this person that I don't like to do a good job for me. And it's really hard to get somebody to do a good job for you when you're telling them how bad of a job they're doing. This was a lesson that I learned this week, again, for about the 25th time this year. I also beat my head off brick walls repeatedly until I realize that it hurts and say I don't want to do that anymore. The good news is that I have a program that enables me to be able to look at a situation that I'm in, and I have a group of people that I can call and I can say, here's my situation and here's some of the things I'm dealing with. Here's what I did. What do you think I should have done differently? And sometimes I don't really like those answers, but I don't ever get an answer that says go get high or go cheat on your wife or go be mean to your kids because you had a bad day. No one tells me to stop being a productive member of society. You guys have a way of guiding me towards a more spiritual path in my life than what I'm currently on when I'm calling you after I've made one of those oh shit mistakes for the 25th or 26th time. I can't get that kind of resource anywhere else in the world. And I can't get that kind of help anywhere. And I've had some serious help in my life. I didn't get where I am today because I just worked 12 steps. I've needed some other help too. And all of my problems weren't just being a drug addict. They weren't just I have a self-obsession with myself and I am extremely afraid of the outside world. I had some other shit that needed help too. None of it gave me the kind of help that I've gotten here in NA though. And none of it gave me the kind of help that I've gotten from other recovering addicts and the kind of empathy that I've got from people being willing to give of themselves without asking anything from me in return, other than occasionally coming and sitting down in front of a fire and telling you guys some stuff. And I don't have a problem doing that ever. I realized in working some steps, especially the sixth and seventh step, that I'm a little self-centered, and that I kind of look out for myself and my own interests. And because I'm also a little manipulative, I have a way of convincing myself that I'm helping you, even though what I'm really doing is trying to get you to do something that's going to benefit me. And I got a lot better with that. I got to the point where I think it would be safe to say I have empathy for other people. And I remember specifically working my seventh step when I realized some of the things that I was doing that I didn't like. And when I talked to my sponsor about these things, he says, well, you know, you're getting ready to do that eighth step, and you're getting ready to put a lot of people down on that list. And some of those people, you might not have gotten to the point where you're ready to let go of those resentments you have. And I said, yes, there are a lot. I have some of those, yes. He explained it to me in terms of, look, when you can understand where other people are coming from and you can look at things from another person's perspective, you can empathize with them, and it enables you to not dislike them so much. And I said, well, John, I don't believe you about that, but I will try it. And an amazing thing happened when I tried to look at why other people thought certain things about me and why other people reacted the way that they did to me. I could kind of see where they came off and where they were getting their information from. I am somewhat oblivious to how I come off to other people at times. Again, I realized I was an asshole a few years ago, and I'm almost 40. So you can see the number of years where I walked around in complete confusion wondering why other people weren't so nice to me. But I've learned that I'm not really a bad person. I'm not an evil person. I'm not trying to hurt people. I'm not trying to cause you harm. I just don't always pay attention to your feelings. And I just don't always pay attention to how I say things to you. I had another attorney in my office sit me down, and he had a long talk with me because I've made some enemies as a lawyer. Specifically, I've made some enemies of some prosecutors, the people that try to put people like us in jail for things. It's safe to say maybe some of those resentments haven't gone away as nearly as much as I thought they have. But he explained to me that it's not what I say to people, and it's not the point that I'm trying to make. It's how I make it. And he said that I often use a sledgehammer where I could use a nice pat on the back. And when he said that, I kind of had one of those come to Jesus moments where I got honest with myself. And I said, you know, Brad, that's amazing that you say that to me, because people have said that to me all my life. And it was a really painful thing to say. And I went home that night, and I sat down with my wife, and I said, you know, I got told some really hard things about myself today at my job. And I don't think they're going to fire me. I don't think they're going to tell me not to come back. But it hurts. It hurts when I realize that, like, how I think I'm treating people isn't how I'm treating people. It's actually a lot different. And I can't control how my assistant reacts to me. I can't control the fact that I don't like how she does her job. And I can't control the fact that she probably doesn't appreciate the position that she has a whole lot. What I can control is how I act towards her. And that's kind of like what I can do. That's the limited area of control that I have in this situation. And I have to be nice to somebody that I don't think I should be nice to. And I have to give her a sense of pride in what she does when I'm not really all that proud of what she's doing for me, because the work isn't that good. But I need her. Like, I absolutely need her, because if she wants to make my life difficult, she can make my life more difficult than anybody else, including my wife, which is tough to do. And I have to approach this thing from a perspective of understanding and empathy, and that's not something that I'm good at, and it's not something that I'm always capable of doing. Empathy is, you know, I kind of relate empathy to love a lot, and I'm fortunate that I've been in this program a lot. I don't have a lot of resentments anymore. And I don't have a whole lot of fear about the future. I've done a really good job of being able to live right where I'm at. Right in today, right in the close proximity, maybe a couple days back, a couple days in the future. With that anger, and being able to counter that with love, that's tough for me to do. And when I'm not in a position where I can express empathy towards another person, the only alternative for me in my head is to be angry with them. And I have a guy that his office is right next to mine. He's kind of one of my bosses. He tells me all the time, he says, you catch a lot more flies with honey than you do with vinegar. And I agree with him on that. And the thing is that honey attracts flies and they like it. Vinegar kills them. And I kind of walk around with backpacks of vinegar all day long. And it's tough to realize that I need to use honey in certain situations, in every situation. Another one of my bosses, because I have five of them that love to tell me what to do all day long, said to me that there's never a situation in life that's made better by getting angry. There's never a single situation that you're going to encounter, Jason, that where you getting pissed off and aggressive with somebody else is going to make the situation any better than it is before you get angry. And those things have kind of stuck with me the last couple of weeks, and they've really made me think and try to reevaluate how I do things and where I'm putting my energy. There's another really useful change in my life over the last few years that has enabled me to look at the triangle of self-obsession. My self-obsession with my own health and my own well-being. And that is, I've had kids recently. About 2 years ago, I was blessed with my first son. His name is Cedric. He's a great little kid. And about 7 months ago, I had a daughter. And anybody that knows me or knows anything about my past, I should not have been allowed to reproduce. And I should not have been, actually, to be honest with you, I'm amazed I found somebody that's willing to put up with me. to clarify, for more than like one night. The kind of people that I deserved were the kind of people that only wanted to be with me for one night, and then they realized, oh shit, get away from this guy. I've been with my wife for a little over 8 years, and I haven't cheated on my wife in 8 years, and that's also a big deal for me. That's a change from where I came from. But my kids are like the greatest thing in the world. In fact, people keep asking me if I'm going to stay over tonight, and I'm like, no, I want to go home. I want to do what I came to do and spend some time with people that I love that I don't get to see except for maybe once a year. And then I want to drive back 4 or 5 hours to get back because I want my kids to wake me up in the morning. I want to hear the pitter-patter of my son's feet down the hall, and then he throws the stuffed animals up and hits me in the face with them and climbs up in bed with me. And he lays like with his head at the foot of the bed and his feet facing me. And I sleep with my legs, you know, kind of at an angle, and he just kicks the shit out of my ass while I'm trying to stay asleep. And I'm like, Cedric, I only got like another 10 minutes before the alarm goes off. That's what I want to go back and experience. Realizing that, like, it's not about me anymore, and it's about taking care of my wife, and it's about taking care of my kids. That's kind of given me a different perspective on life. I don't really care too much about what I want anymore, and I'm not really concerned with, I guess, really my own well-being. I'm concerned about making sure that I put myself in the best position I can for my family. That is not how I grew up. I grew up with parents that didn't really pay any attention to me. When I was 2 years old, the police used to pick me up in my diaper about a mile away from my house on a 6-lane highway. And what I was trying to do was get across that 6-lane highway because there was a Best. I don't know if anybody's old enough to remember Best stores, but there was a Best. Not a Best Buy, just a Best. It was before the Best Buy. It was across that 6-lane highway, and in that 6-lane highway, or in that Best store, they had Hot Wheels. And they had this one Hot Wheel where if you looked in the back of it, you could see a picture of the Incredible Hulk. And I tell you, man, I wanted that thing. I wanted it bad. I wanted it enough that when my mom passed out because she was depressed and had a lot of mental health issues and never paid attention to where the hell I was, that's why we had a big fenced-in backyard, I would put enough things together to get up to the deadbolt mm-hmm. at the top of my front door and unlock it and get on my trike. And I'd get on my trike, man, and I'd pedal that thing as fast as I fucking could to get to the end of my development to get to that six-lane highway. I got picked up 3 times in my development, and 3 times I made it to the highway. And I remember this clearly. This isn't like, I'm not just saying this for your entertainment. I clearly remember this, and there's a point I'll get to eventually, I'm sure, hopefully. I wasn't worried about the fact that I was sitting on a 6-lane highway and there were cars flying past me. The thought occurred to me when I got there was, shit, when I get there and I get the car, how do I get out of the store with it? I don't have any money. I'm in a diaper. That's what I was concerned about. And the police pulled up and said, can we help you? And of course, I didn't know how to talk. I didn't have any ID on me. I didn't know who I was. And it took a while to find my mom. My kid doesn't go anywhere today without me knowing where he is. And that's a difference. I'm not making the same mistakes my mom made with me. My dad was alive until I was about 15. My parents stayed married. I do a lot of divorce work, and I don't take pleasure in it. I do my job. My parents should have been divorced about 14 years before my dad passed away. They didn't get along well, and so as a result, I grew up in a house where it was normal to just yell and scream and throw things at people and hit each other and push each other down the stairs when we were angry. And do a lot of manipulative, nasty things to each other. That was normal. I can tell you that growing up, that doesn't play well when you get a normal person. When I had the first normal girlfriend I had, didn't quite understand why I behaved the way I did, and that didn't last very long. And I didn't have very many normal girlfriends after that. I found girls that were willing to put up with that type of behavior because they came from similar backgrounds and they were of similar ilk as I was, and those were the kind of people I thought I deserved to be around. I didn't think I deserved anybody better than that. My wife is a really, really normal person. She grew up with 2 really loving parents. She wasn't abused as a kid. Her parents love her. They don't tell her how much of a piece of shit she is. They don't tell her that she made too many mistakes in life, and they don't tell her that she could screw up a wet dream the way my parents said it to me. These are differences. And what's nice is that, like, my wife picked me. Like, when I said, hey, will you marry me? She said, absolutely. And why that's important is because I want to remind you where I was when I got here. Nobody wanted to hug me because I smelled too goddamn bad and I hadn't washed my hair for 9 months because I thought it was fucking Kurt Cobain. And things are different today. You know, the last thing I want to say is And I don't mean to talk about my kids so much, but honestly, they're like the greatest thing in the world to me. My kids laugh so much. I mean, my son, we drove down to Columbus from, I live in Lima, Ohio. It's about halfway between Toledo and Dayton, which means that's where everybody stops when they're delivering crack cocaine from Toledo or from Dayton to Toledo. So my hometown or where I live now has a very large crack problem. They are coming around to the idea of heroin, and the crackheads are realizing that for a lot less money, they can stay high for a lot longer. And things are starting to change, and as a result, when I left Pittsburgh, I went to a funeral about once every month. And people are starting to die in Lima, and people are starting to realize that, holy shit, heroin is really bad for you. This shit can kill you. It's been a nice reprieve for the last 5 years that people didn't die so goddamn often while I was in Crackville. But it's changing now. But nonetheless, when I was driving down from Lima to Columbus, it's about an hour and a half drive, my son laughed and made, like, funny noises and, like, tried to, like, you know, point it out the window and yelled at shit the whole way. And it was, like, kind of weird. Like, it reminded me of eating acid and just laughing for, like, hours at a time. I know my 2-year-old son hasn't eaten any acid. I certainly haven't given it to him, and my wife doesn't do that. I'm amazed by it. And my daughter, who's only like 7 months, she's kind of the same way. Like, she giggles a lot. I showed a good friend of mine, Cheryl, I showed her a video on my phone I have of my daughter, and it's 2.5 minutes long. My daughter fucking laughed the whole time. Like, she didn't stop laughing for 2.5 minutes. And I kept filming because I was like, this is amazing. I'm amazed by that because A, I've never had kids, and B, when I was a kid, I didn't laugh. I didn't laugh at anything. The first time I laughed really hard was the first time I got high. And you all know what happened the first time you got high. It felt great. It was the answer. And thus, I went through the whole same thing that we all did to get us here. I've been able to do things differently in my life than the way I should have turned out. I went to jail for a felony when I was 18 years old. When I was, I gotta do the math, 32, I sat in a giant auditorium and took a bar exam for the state of Ohio to become an attorney. I think you can understand that you can't be an attorney and a convicted felon. They don't let you do that. I've made significant changes in my life to allow me to do that. This wasn't necessarily something that magically happened, like I did some work, but those changes came because of this program. It's not because of my wonderful wife. It's not because of the hard work I put in, because I didn't know how to work hard when I got here. It's because of the things that I've learned here and the people that I've met here. It's because of the values that my sponsors taught me. It's because of the values that my sponsor taught me. It's because of the values I've learned from watching people come in, decide it's not for them, and go back out, and come back and say, hey, that was a real bad decision. Maybe I need to stay here. And it's the values that I've learned from watching people come in and say, hey, you know what? I tried my best. I gave it my all. But at the end of the day, I'd rather shoot up and die. And all of these lessons have given me the perspective that I have today. And my perspective today is that life is really freaking awesome. And life is really worth living. And it does suck. I get it. I was in college. I know what it's like to struggle and to be like, man, this is so freaking hard. And it's not the work that's hard. It's the doing the things that everybody else does in college that came normal to them because they grew up differently than we did. My first day of college, I stood paralyzed in a little entryway between the cafeteria, one of the cafeterias and the front door at IUP. And I watched people just walk in and out. I was afraid to move because I couldn't understand how these people could just walk around. Like, nobody was scared. Everybody was just talking to each other. They knew where they were supposed to go. I was terrified to walk into my first fucking class. And I know how great I have it today because I know where I came from and I haven't forgot that. Love is a difficult thing for me to practice. I'm not a loving person. I used to tell people all the time, I hate it when people hug me because I just don't. I'm not into hugs. There are a few people I like to hug me. Frank used to give me great hugs, and I miss Frank a lot. My sponsor gives me great hugs. But other than that, I really don't like hugging people. I'm not good with that bond. The love is something I struggle with. Like I said, I can let go of a resentment. Resentments are easy. You pray for somebody until you mean it. Until you mean when you say, I wish them the best and I wish them to have everything that they need. That's how I deal with resentments. Fear is easy. I look at God and I say, God, I'm going to practice this third step. I'm going to do what I need to do and I'm going to put one foot in front of the other and I'm going to trust and I'm going to have faith that things are going to turn out the way they're supposed to. And I'm just asking you to get me to that point. But the anger and the love is where I struggle. I don't always treat people fairly. And the sick thing is I don't know I'm doing it most of the time. Because I don't know if you guys know it or not, but we weren't exactly treated very well. We didn't get high because our lives were great. We got high because it was the fucking answer to a problem. And it turned out to later be the problem. But I can't thank you enough for allowing me to come back. I really appreciate the committee that asked me to come here and speak. I don't get to come back here very often. I don't get to see the people that are here very often. I also don't get to be involved with Narcotics Anonymous as much as I used to. And that's okay. I will give back when I can what I have without asking for anything in return. If I didn't say anything that helped anybody here, please understand I'm not Narcotics Anonymous. I'm just one guy that's been around here for a little while and kind of has a bad attitude occasionally. Please go somewhere else and ask somebody else. If I said something you don't agree with, go ask your sponsor about it. Get some clarity. Don't leave here and think this doesn't fucking work. I'm going to go get high. Because getting high and dying is a very permanent solution to a very temporary problem. Because we can get better. I'm living proof. And I'm really grateful that you gave me a place to say my name's Jason and I'm an addict.